Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Hey, sailor!
Today is July 2nd, 2017, and this is the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, episode 140, Gay the Musical. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we are going to be talking to you all about some of our favorite gay ships in gaming. Of course, we are entering into our slow summer months, you know, this post-E3 lull. We typically end up having, you know, 4 or 5 weeks where the news isn't coming in quite as hot. We get a little sillier, do some laid-back topics of discussion, and Slaggy wanted to celebrate Gay Pride Month here on Game Buoy since we had not done anything.
Yeah, but I guess now we're just talking about gay boats.
Oh,
I guess the SS Game Buoy is a gay ship, kind of.
Oh, it is hella not in this context, girl. But, you know, we're going to talk about some of our favorite romantical pairings in same-sex romantic pairings in games, celebrate Pride a little bit, and we will be back at you next week for a fan-requested episode I'm really excited about. That's the last thing I want to say before we get into our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. We are soliciting episode pitches to get us through these summer months. So if there's anything you would like to hear us talk about, now is the time to let us know. All of that having been said, Slaggy, do you want to get us started this week?
Yes. Koei Tecmo has given the first look at the premium and treasure box editions of Fire Emblem Warriors. There is going to be a premium box edition, which is 10,800 yen for Switch and 9,800 yen for 3DS, so not too much of a price difference. It includes the game, a 3-disc soundtrack, an 80-page art book, and a character postcard set. The treasure box edition is 5,000 yen more for each platform, and also comes with a Dragonstone crystal with voice.
Ooh. So let me ask you, Slaggy, we live in a brave new world with regard to imports. You know, typically Switch games, especially the first-party ones, as we've seen, you import one of these games, put it in your English-language set console, and you're still playing the English-language version of the game. With that in mind, any chance you'll be importing either of these?
I'll probably wait for the domestic release, but, you know.
Well,
I
specifically mean importing the special editions.
Right, right, so
for people who, you know, have always wanted to get in on these special editions for a series like these, the Switch is actually going to be, I think, a really interesting opportunity for people to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if Fire Emblem Warriors would be the one I would do that for, but they're nice sets.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm kind of into the idea of getting that soundtrack in particular and the art book. I always feel like the Fire Emblem games have such great art, you know?
Oh, you just want to see if there's Hunky Ike arc.
Ah, well, you're not wrong. Well, I also would like to talk a little bit today about Naruto to Boruto Shinobi Striker, which will be releasing in North America in early 2018. This is, of course, the upcoming multiplayer action game by Valhalla Game Studios that we had spoken about. Slaggy, this news came out of the Anime Expo event that's happening down in SoCal this weekend. What are your thoughts on Naruto to Boruto? I keep wanting to say To Boruto,
yeah,
but I've been told that it's two.
Really? It's not. It doesn't mean and?
Yeah, it's meant to be two as in,
oh,
like
a transition from Naruto to Boruto.
Exactly.
I feel like we talked about that.
I think we did.
I tried to call you out on it, but you're like, no. Yeah, I mean, the Naruto games seem like they're always pretty good, so I can't really speak to Boruto. I heard that it's kind of, as far as anime, kind of slow to start, but
I've been watching it every week. I'm really enjoying it, but also
You also watched like 700 episodes of regular Naruto anyway, so.
Well, pretty much.
You're in it for the long haul. Yeah, I mean, but these Naruto games are usually, at least, you know, visually striking, usually pretty good, so I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word that Undernight in Birth, EXE Late Est, will be releasing in North America on PS4 later this year in North America. And in fact, it'll be releasing on PS4, PS3, and PS Vita. So this is, as far as I'm aware, the most current iteration of the well-loved Japanese fighting game series. Psyche, is this one on your radar at all?
I did not even know this was a thing.
Oh, yeah, it's like the most anime fighter that ever anime fightered. And I know that you actually get into anime fighters a little bit. I saw you in an arcade yesterday playing Blaze Blue and everything, so I thought you might be into it.
Yeah, I'll have to look into it.
Awesome.
So Super Bomberman R has a new update, version 1.4, and it has added Vic Viper Bomber, Simon Belmont Bomber, and Pyramid Head Bomber, along with 4 new versus stages and 2 new series of accessories. They look really cute. I've not had a chance to play as any of the new bombers yet, but like Simon Belmont Bomber is really cute, and
Pyramid Head Bomber is just like, what?
Pretty much. This is kind of difficult, though, because last episode we also said that we were no longer going to support Konami. So,
well, the thing to keep in mind here is that these are free downloads.
That's
true. It's an update. It's not DLC.
That's true.
I was actually prepared to talk about that on this episode. Like, for me, I already own this game, so I'm going to get the update, and I'm going to play it and have a good time. I would probably, at this point now, though, not buy this game unless I found it used. Like,
yeah.
Fuck Konami, in full effect again.
Mm-hmm. We have news from XSEED that The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel is coming to Steam sometime this month. That's all we know. But it has enhanced frame rates, extra dialogue, and more.
Yes. We also have a nice update on Taiko no Tatsujin for PS4. Hori will be doing a new controller for the PS4 version of Taiko no Tatsujin. But even more exciting is that we got the confirmation that this title will have more than 70 tracks, including Zen Zen Zensei from the film Your Name. You might be familiar with it by Radwimps. It's kind of like a big highlight of the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm freaking out. Like, I went from like, okay, well, I want to play this, but maybe the Switch one will be enough, to now it's like, I must have this. I love Your Name. I love so much the soundtrack to it, and just the idea of playing any songs from that movie in a rhythm game for me is an instant sell. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, this definitely is on my radar.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here that there is currently an update, or not an update, a password that you can enter in Pokemon Sun and Moon to get 5 free Mega Stones for Mega Evolution. Slaggy, do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah, so you can get a Sceptileite, Blaziken-ite, Swampert-ite, Bennett-ite, and a Camerupt-ite.
Excellent. You know, it's interesting that I feel like everything for the, like, Mega Stones and Mega Evolutions in Sun and Moon are being done really, like, out in the cuts. Like, it's not integrated into the game at all.
Well, it has nothing to do with the lore, really.
Yeah, it's really weird to me. Like, I know that people don't want the Mega Evolution type stuff to be, like, removed completely because, you know, they have teams built around the idea that they're going to have one of their Pokies in a competition ready to Mega Evolve or whatever. But, like, I don't know. It's just so weird to me that it's so removed from the core game in this instance. Does that rub you the wrong way at all, or am I just weird?
All right. It doesn't really bother me.
That sounded like I'm just weird. So we have also learned recently that the much-loved Hitman series, more specifically the most recent Hitman game, which previously had released with a subscription-based seasonal model, is now going to be available as a free-to-start game.
Yeah, so that's interesting that they're taking this route, and I mean, I think it's a good move because, you know, especially since they own that IP now and they're going to be solely responsible for it.
Yeah, IO Interactive, as we discussed last week, is now entirely in charge of the Hitman franchise.
You know, the more people who are able to play it and be like, oh, this is cool, I think that it will just, you know, allow them to grow their audience. And I never got around to this, so, I mean, now I will at least do the Playground, which is the free part, so.
Excellent. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's such a great game. Really did not get the love it deserves. So I'm really excited about it having a new lease on life.
Oh, great. A third chance at life.
Exactly where I was going with that. Well done.
Killer Instinct is coming to Steam.
Oh?
Yeah, this was announced at the CEO Fighting Games Tournament. And also, apparently, if you own the Definitive Edition for Xbox One or Windows 10, you will get a free download of the new character Eagle, as well as Shin Hisako and Kilgore for the Steam version.
Yes! I have that, so I'll get all this. That's awesome.
And in some Pactastic news, we've learned that the Switch version of Namco Museum is going to include Pac-Man Versus. This was the Nintendo Namco GameCube collaboration, which allows you to have three players as ghosts and one player as Pac-Man. I feel like we talked about this way back in the early Wii U days when...
Yes, we did.
We were talking about...
Asymmetrically designed games.
Gameplay, and for Switch, that seems like a really good choice. I'm really looking forward to playing this.
Yeah, so I'm told the way that it will work is basically, like, the person who is the ghost or whatever will be playing the game on their handheld Switch, and everyone else will be playing on a second Switch that is connected to the TV. That way you still have that asymmetrical thing where the, you know, one player has their own screen and everything. It's not quite as elegant as the Wii U would have been for this. But this is the one use case where the Wii U could be described as elegant, so worthwhile trade-off, I guess.
Oh, man, I want... This makes me want Luigi's Ghost Mansion for Switch. Like, just basically the Nintendo Land game, but expanded into a full game with, like, a full series of levels.
I don't even need it expanded. Like, it could literally just be that game as a $10 eShop download.
That's
and
true.
I'd be in, like, Flynn. So, in a related news, we actually have a release date for Namco Museum on Switch. That'll be releasing on July 28th, which is not too far away.
Yeah, we have Zero Time Dilemma is coming to PS4 in North America on August 18th.
Gundam Versus will be releasing in North America on PS4 September 27th.
DJ Max Respect is coming to the Asia region on July 28th.
And the important thing to note about that is that the game's developer and publisher are specifically targeting a global community with this release. It will have a fully localized English language mode.
Well, yeah, as I would expect those Asia releases, too.
Well, you know, a lot of times the Asian releases, they do now increasingly have English language options, but for a really long time, they were often, like, very subpar in terms of the translation quality. So it's a big deal now that teams are really putting real effort into those translations.
That's good.
For a worldwide audience. StarCraft Remastered will be releasing on the Battle.net platform, or Blizzard app platform, on August 14th. Metal Slug 2 will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch as a Neo Geo download next week. The well-loved here-in-the-studio game Coldicept Revolt has been delayed to the first week of October, which obviously has me very upset. Knights of Azure 2 will be releasing in North America on October 24th, Europe October 27th. Kirby's Blowout Blast will be releasing on the 3DS this Thursday, July 6th.
That's excellent. I heard a very off-color joke regarding this game's title that I will have to tell you off-air.
I can already imagine. And Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 has been confirmed on the Switch for a September 7th release date in Japan. Hopefully, the North American release is not too far after that. But I also have my fingers crossed, since the game is already well long since localized, that this will be another one where we can just download the Japanese release and have at. Did you have any other follow-ups or release date updates, Slaggy?
No.
All right, then it is time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
So, oh my god, is the only thing that can be said about this first news piece. Nintendo has formally announced the Super NES Classic Edition. It's going to be releasing in North America on September 29th, 2017. And it has a pretty shocking piece of news here that just, for me at least, blew my mind away. The console is going to be a $79.99 price point, which is a little more than the NES Classic previously had been released. It will come with two controllers and 21 games, which you may note, more controllers than the NES Classic had, fewer games. But it's really the games list that is something very special. We have Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, Earthbound, Final Fantasy 6 / 3, F-Zero, Kirby Superstar.
Star Fox 2.
Why would you say that? I had a whole bit. I was going to skip it on the list. And then you were going to say, I think you're missing something. And then I was going
to
say Star Fox 2.
See, I
Star
was trying
Fox
to...
2's inclusion in this set is so ridiculous. This is a game that has never been released everywhere in the world, that has always been represented to us, that it has never been completed. Even the versions of the game that you can go out there and buy, like, reproduction cartridges of at, you know, some game stores or, you know, on eBay or Amazon, they have battles that were never finished. Things that, like, if you do X, Y, or Z, like, you can end up crash-locking your game. What we are apparently getting from Nintendo here is going to be a finished product that we can play all the way through and enjoy every part of. This is unheard of insofar as I can recall. Slaggy, what was your response to the news that Star Fox 2 is going to be on this thing?
I was really surprised. I didn't ever think that we were going to see it, but... I mean, it's a good draw for getting people to buy this. I mean, the other thing is that, for the most part, this is pretty much a all-killer-no-filler list.
Yeah, yeah, to finish that, of course, since I got so rudely interrupted.
Well, see, because I was trying to mention it casually, and then you were going to be like, wait, what? That game isn't finished. And then I'll be
this
like,
is
yes,
the problem
it is.
When we independently come up with bits and don't inform the other. So we also got, of course, Link to the Past, Mega Man X, Secret of Mana, Star Fox, Street Fighter II Turbo, Super Castlevania IV, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars, Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Super Punch-Out, and Yoshi's Island. So that is, yeah, like you said, man, that is all killer, no filler. And then Star Fox 2 on top of that? Oh, you know, Nintendo is saying... adamantly that they will be producing more units of the Super NES than we got of the NES Classic. And I'm sorry, I should say Super NES Classic, but y'all followed me. I'm still worried that there's going to be a problem here, because this is going to be the only official legit way to play Star Fox 2 ever in any capacity. I do sort of expect that we'll get a virtual console release of it at some point, but at least for a little while, this is going to be it from, like, an official legit perspective. And I cannot imagine this thing not doing incredibly well just for that, even if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really hard to find. Sorry.
We also have word that Japan will be getting the Super Famicom Mini. I'm sorry, the Mini Super Famicom on October 5th. Oh, it is adorable.
I mean, the Super Famicom was always a cuter console than the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. But it has a couple of extra games, different games from what we are getting here. The Japanese release is not going to have Super Punch-Out, Super Castlevania IV, Kirby's Dream Course, or Earthbound. But it will have Fire Emblem, Mystery of the Emblem, The Legend of the Mystical Ninja, Super Soccer, and Panel de Pon, which you might know better as Tetris Attack. It's also worth mentioning that the Street Fighter game on the Japanese unit is not going to be Street Fighter II Turbo. It is instead Super Street Fighter II The New Challengers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so pretty interesting to me, actually.
I'm a little jealous that they get Panel de Pon, honestly.
Yeah, seriously. That and, for me, Super Street Fighter 2 would be better than Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
I thought you were going to say Super Soccer is a very notable exclusion.
Ah, no, I would not say that. Although, you know, Legend of the Mystical Ninja Goemon, that's also a great time. So, overall, man, I think both regions getting great versions of this thing. Are you going to try to pick one of these up, either Japan or North American?
I mean, if I can, but I feel like it's going to be impossible, honestly. I'm being a pessimist.
Well, fingers crossed. I hope it isn't as bad as you're fearing. We also have word that we will be getting another Jake Hunter game released in North America, this one on the 3DS. This is Jake Hunter Detective Story Ghost of the Dusk. It is going to be published by Axis Games in 2018.
He's handsome.
We also have word of the upcoming Creeping Terror. This is a 3DS horror game. It was announced this week at Anime Expo that it will be heading to North America for a PC and 3DS release this fall.
I like the announcement, or, like, the details about a game. A player maneuvers the high school girl Arisa to explore cave, tunnel, and old mansion.
Yes. We also have word here that the Seven Deadly Sins anime spin-off game, The Seven Deadly Sins Knights of Britannia, will be releasing in North America in early 2018 as a PS4 exclusive. Along similar lines, we also have word that the Little Witch Academia PS4 game will be releasing in North America in early 2018 as well. I tell you, it feels like a whole new world that we get so many of these licensed anime games here now. How rad is that?
I want to play as Susie if you can.
For your sake, I hope you can. Saigi, I know you're our resident Sega nerd. Do you want to take this last one?
Wait, how did I get stuck with that designation? I'm like, you own a Saturn. I think you're the Sega nerd.
No, but this is so much.
This is actually really cool news. Sega has released a app for Android and iOS called Sega Forever that will give you free access to games from its back catalog. It currently has launched with Altered Beast, Comics Zone, Kid Chameleon, Phantasy Star 2, and Sonic the Hedgehog. It is free. It will support cloud saves, controller support, and leaderboards. And the only charge is if you want to play them without the ads, you only have to pay $1.99, which is, like, not that bad.
Yeah, and you know
what? One-time $1.99 fee for access to these games.
And, you know, it really has to be said, I tend to be very picky with my emulation on titles like these. Obviously, you know, the one for me that's easiest to confirm, like, the quality of emulation on is probably Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
I actually felt like Sonic the Hedgehog from the Sega Forever download was, like, a really great presentation of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Interesting.
You know, obviously playing a game like that on a touch screen is not really my favorite thing in the world to do, but all in all, I was actually really impressed by it. It was better than what the emulation quality you typically find in those, like, boxes that connect to your TV, the, like, classic plug-and-play retro console or whatever. So it was better than that. Low bar, but, you know. All right, all that having been said, we do have some cultured news bits for you as well over in our Culture Club, where we talk about some news stories that, you know, maybe don't fit in our other segments, but are about and or important to gaming culture. Slaggy, do you want to get us started here?
Yeah, this is a cool story coming out of the Pokemon Invitational. Is that what they call it? I guess maybe it's not an Invitational. The Pokemon Championships International, sorry. I was close. So, it basically involves a player who is well known for, being an Eevee player and kind of structuring his team around that. Basically, he was up against a very skilled and celebrated German player, and things were not looking good, but then basically, he had only 13 hit points left on a Dragonite, and Dragonite was put to sleep. It was not looking good, but Dragonite woke up and used Earthquake, and then a Smeargle came out and only did 9 points of damage, so this gentleman, Giovanni Costa, who I hope is not any relationship to Giovanni of Team Rocket, ended up winning this match. So it'd be, it's really cool to hear things like this happen in competitive Pokemon because, like, you know, you would think, like, oh, it's Pokemon, it's for babbies, but, like,
well, I wouldn't think that.
People would, but, you know, so I think it's pretty cool.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. I'm always happy, always, always, always happy when something happens that goes against, like, the strict, like, matchup-type expectations. So I'm just really, really excited to hear that, like, you know, hey, things in this match did not go the way that you would have expected on paper. I'm into that.
Me too.
We also have word here that the well-loved Beyond Skyrim mod for Skyrim has now added the giant city Bruma into Skyrim. This is, of course, a city that is also well known and loved from the Elder Scrolls Oblivion. I believe it's popped up in some other game, but honestly, I'm not super, super up on my Elder Scrolls lore, so I could be wrong. Might even be the online game, but again, not my series. That having been said, I think stuff like this is really cool. It's always
especially
interesting.
Especially because this is like fan-developed. It's basically a new expansion for the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, seems like a really cool thing for people to have done. And according to the fan team that made it, it's apparently, like, this mod is actually larger and contains more content than even, like, the Dragonborn DLC for the actual game. So that's pretty wild stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's really neat.
Like, it almost, like, I was gonna wait until the Switch version to finally play this, but I'm like, I doubt that the Switch version is going to have any mod support, really. And part of what seems really interesting about the Skyrim community is, like, how much fan content there is. So I might... I have Skyrim on Steam, actually. I just never got around to it. So maybe I should make a point of playing it on PC.
Excellent. We also have word here that some intrepid Grand Theft Auto Online players have found a way to activate the secret alien mission early. This, of course, is kind of a big deal. You may be aware, we've even talked about this, kind of the only context in which we talk about Grand Theft Auto, but, you know, the game has long seemed to certain people to have some secrets that to this day have never been unlocked. One of them relates to, I guess, a giant alien egg that no one has ever figured out what to do with. Apparently, though, in a recent update to GTA Online, there were some updates and lines of code that seemed to hint at an alien UFO-like crash event near the Zancudo military base. People who do GTA modding had found switches and variables they were able to alter in-game in order to activate an alien supply mission. So, you know, you can find footage online about how the whole mission plays out. I'm not going to go into any more than that in case, you know, you're not trying to be spoiled or whatever. But overall, I think this is really cool. I think it's very exciting for the GTA fandom and community online to know that, you know, they're still getting content. You know, it's been like 5 years. They're still getting content for that game.
Yeah.
It's cool stuff.
So the next one that we're going to talk about is a very interesting one. This is the latest work from Robert Yang, who you might be familiar with from his Radiator series of games, which typically explore male-male sexuality. There's one about, like, showering up with a dude in the gym showers and stuff. And, you know, he is one of the, you know, content creators out there who unabashedly puts very sexual gay stuff in games, has had some controversial interactions with, in terms of Twitch banning streaming of his games because, oh, they feature dudes and penises and stuff. So this latest game that he put out is The Tea Room. It's based on a historical event from the 1960s in Mansfield, Ohio, which is basically the short story is that the police officers in Mansfield, Ohio had put a hidden camera in a restroom where men were soliciting sexual encounters with other men because, you know, it was a very different time. You know, this was the only for a lot of gentlemen who were looking for encounters.
Same-sex interactions.
Yeah, this was the only way that they could fulfill their fantasies and such. And so this is built around this premise. Basically, long story short, the police were using it as entrapment to, you know, arrest gay men for being sexual in public, quote unquote. And so, you know, it's a very, you know, big thing in you know, queer history. But for those of you who aren't familiar, that's kind of the background. So this game, The Tea Room, is centered around that idea of soliciting sexual encounters in a restroom. But the twist is that instead of penises, that you are licking a gentleman's gun. The gun starts out looking kind of fleshy, but then ends up, the more that you pleasure the man, turns into, like, an actual gun-looking gunmetal.
Yeah, it starts
like
to become more rigid and change color and texture from and fleshy to hard, cold gunmetal gray.
And this is, you know, meant to be commentary on the fact that, oh, well, Twitch will let you stream games with guns and shooting the F out of people, but not penises. So I thought that, you know, that's a really clever commentary on, you know, idea of censorship. But also just really an interesting, I mean, like, just like a really interesting concept of, you know, game design. Because basically you have to try to pleasure the gentleman who come in and, but, you know, not proposition someone who doesn't want to be, or who might be an undercover cop. And so basically, he also says that basically that, if you see a cop coming up, then you should just quit the game, because otherwise if the cops bust you, then your bullet progress, which is how many guns you've pleasured, will reset. So it's, I think that there's some really interesting things going on game design wise. And, you know, especially coming out at the very end of Pride Month and, you know, looking at this part of queer history that, you know, and I mean, I say queer history, but we still have situations where, like in New York, I believe, there was some entrapment going on. Then, you know, everyone probably knows about the late George Michael, who was arrested for soliciting a sexual encounter. So, I mean, it's just, I think, really interesting in terms of just the queer history of it, you know?
Absolutely. And that is for me, you know, we often here on this show don't talk about games that could be viewed as particularly explicit. But as Saigi said, you know, technically this game isn't even that explicit. Like, there are not dongs or whatever in it.
Yeah, and I mean, Robert Yane's games are always a little tongue-in-cheek, too. I mean, we say, like, explicit, but I mean, there are, like, eroge out there that are, like, I mean, I would say that even Beat 'em and Eat 'em is a lot more crass than, you know, something like this.
Well, anyway, my point really was that part of why I wanted to point this out is I know that we have a lot of listeners who are younger than us. I actually remember when this was the way of the gay world. You know, I haven't necessarily had a lot of tea room experiences myself, but a lot of people just a few years older than me, people who, you know, were kind of like my queer mentors, this was the life they lived. And so, you know, I think now even in this Kotaku comment section on this article about the game, which we'll link you to over on GameBuie.org, which is a really great, respectful piece that I thought was really positive and really interesting. Even then, the comment section, while not the typical comment section shit show, has a lot of younger LGBT folks, or at least folks identifying as younger LGBT folks, who are talking about how, like, it's crazy that this ever needed to be done. It, you know, this is, you know, this can't be like what it used to be like. And it's like, no, this was our real history. We're just rapidly disconnected from it. And that's an issue. So,
yeah.
I would say, you know, especially if you're not familiar with this kind of thing, you're not familiar with how scary it used to be, you know, on the LGBT spectrum, you know, you're not really aware of the history there. A lot of Robert Yang's games, I think, would be really valuable for you to revisit, and this one in particular.
And then it also has the, you know, aspect of, you know, people who, you know, who for whom public sex is, you know, something they seek out, or is their kink or their fetish or whatever. I mean, I say kink or fetish, but I mean, I don't even know if that's the right term. But, you know, it also gives them, you know, the ability to, you know, fulfill that through a game. The funny thing is that I had an idea for something like this, but it was going to be more GTA styled. So, like, not just confined in this one room. But, of course, I don't have the coding skills to do that. But it's interesting. It's, like I said, it's interesting to see this queer history and, like, this aspect of queer history be presented in a game.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that I expected we would see presented in a game, but I'm glad that we have. I truly am. So, all right, well, let's move on to a vaguely related story. Something that was missed on a lot of people, but that is getting a little bit of attention due to, of course, Pride, is that in its Legion expansion last year, World of Warcraft got its official first lesbian couple in-game. These are the NPCs Enchantress Ilyana and Priestess Driana. They have a small quest chain where you basically get to see the history of their romance a little bit. I think it's really cool stuff. You know, WoW has always had a huge gay player base. They've always had some really cool like community events, and Blizzard has been typically supportive of that community, although not always as much as we'd
not
like.
Not always.
Well, see, and you're here. Okay, well, let me put it this way. Why would you correct me that way?
Oh, no, no. No. I was reiterating. I meant yes, not always, because you know, they were shutting down like gay guilds because of their names and stuff. So I was saying yes, not always. And it is interesting. This article also mentions that our friend Todd Harper from the Game Bar podcast had been doing a talk or a lecture or something, or but it was with Rob Pardo, who was, you know, at the time, yeah, it was an MIT Media Lab talk. So he had, Todd had asked Rob Pardo about, you know, Blizzard's values, and then Rob Pardo had been like, that's not really something that's we're actively trying to do. And then he left the company.
Yeah. So we, that's
good news, though. I mean, like, you know, Tracer from Overwatch is a lesbian, which was drama, but, you know, I think Blizzard's really trying these days.
We also have word here that there are some translation issues involved in the Steam release of Princess Maker 3, the long-awaited fan-favorite racing sim. Slaggy, this is one you brought up to me this weekend, completely unrelated to Game Buoy. Do you want to talk a little bit about this?
Well, it wasn't completely unrelated, because we were watching a Did You Know Gaming or something, and it showed Princess Maker 2, and I was like, oh my god, did you hear about the mess of the translation of Princess Maker 3? So basically, you know, Princess Maker dates all the way back to Studio Gainax, and so basically, you know, this has been a well-loved series. We finally have a Steam release of Princess Maker 3, but the translation is really bad, and there's even issues for, like, text wrapping, things where words will just go on to the next line. this is a really fun article from Gita Jackson over on Kotaku, talking about how she wanted to name her Princess Haley, but because even the, like, the text choice, the font choices are so weird that she accidentally named her daughter Haiti. And then, like, there's a carpenter job, but it's actually masonry. But the thing that's actually cool about this article is that she says it almost ruins the game, but, you know, recognizing that there's still positive qualities in the game despite the terrible translation. And I think that's really great. She actually replied to someone's comment and said, "It's, you know, it's a great game, but the translation is so garbo that I had to mention it." So, I mean, I almost feel like at this point, this just came out, but either they'll patch it or it'll just be like meme status. And in that way, that's almost kind of charming.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we have one more segment before we get to our discussion. Let's talk about some of the downers of the week in first up here, we have word from Square Enix and Kadokawa Games that the mobile RPG Akashic Records will be terminating service on August 31st. Of course, you know, this sucks. This game was one that a lot of people were looking forward to. Ryo Mizuno-san was the one doing the story, which you might be familiar with their work on Record of the Lodoss War. It had, you know, real-time RPG battles and multiplayer co-op. But for whatever reason, you know, probably just that it didn't really have the player base, the game is being discontinued. Although the currently ongoing light novel and manga series will both continue being published. At this point, as noted by Silicon Era, we are now at the point where 11 of the 17 smartphone games released by Square Enix in 2016 have already ended service. Yeah, not a cute look.
Also in some bummer news, Project RapRabbit's Kickstarter failed at only $162,000 raised of the goal of $1,107,706. This means that development of the game has been halted, but Masaya Matsuda-san and Keiichi Yano-san are committed to, you know, bring this game to life. And, you know, even though it's not in active development, this is a passion project of theirs that, you know, they're hoping. I believe they said that they had some meetings at E3. That, you know, they were, you know, trying to talk to different publishers and stuff. So it's just really a shame that, you know, the kerfuffle evolving the first few days of this Kickstarter, I think, really kind of messed it up.
Yeah, really sad stuff there. We also have word here, and this is posted at Kotaku. Jason Schreier has posted that his sources have indicated to him that Mass Effect Andromeda will not be getting any single-player DLC at this point.
Cool!
You know, and I point out that this is Schreier reporting based on his sources for two reasons. And the first is that, strictly speaking, this is not official word. Anything could happen. But two, Schreier is right a substantial portion of the time more than he is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Kotaku in general, to the point where Ubisoft, like, blacklists them and stuff for leaking Assassin's Creed stuff. That ends up being true.
Yeah, the most recent Assassin's Creed game, Kotaku was talking about it with leaked screenshots like 2 years ago. So, yeah, I unfortunately do buy this. I do believe it. I think Mass Effect Andromeda really is being left out to dry, and I'm devastated about it.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed. Like, some of my favorite stuff has in Mass Effect has come through DLC. Like, Lair of the Shadow Broker for Mass Effect 2. I loved that campaign. And it's a shame that we're not going to see. Like, I still haven't played Andromeda, but now when I do, it's going to just be that. And
well, yes, and while you're doing it, savor it like a fine meal, because it could be the last Mass Effect game you play. I'm not threatening your life, I just mean there won't be more.
No, I know. But some lives that are being threatened are those of the Fantastic Four. If you are kind of in the Marvel fandom, this probably isn't news to you, because Fox owns the rights to Fantastic Four in terms of movies, and as you know, Disney owns the rights to pretty much everything else besides Spider-Man, and so basically...
Sony has Spider-Man, although they're now working with Marvel Studios on the new Spider-Man movie that comes out next week, but also, Fox also has the X-Men.
Yes, and so correct me if I'm wrong, but basically, Marvel Comics Division has been trying to shit all over the Fantastic Four and the X-Men to discourage Fox from doing anything with those franchises, correct?
This is basically what's been observable for the last 5 years or so, yes.
And so what
this week, one of the producers at Capcom that's working on Marvel vs. Capcom
said,
not the game that you and I are talking about right now, but
Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite said
that
don't even know the X-Men anymore.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so we're talking about Marvel Heroes, which is made by Gazillion. It's the massively multiplayer Marvel fun time game. As of yesterday, you're no longer able to purchase Fantastic Four characters or costumes. It has to do with licensing agreements. If you already own these costumes or characters, you'll still be able to continue playing them. But, no more Fantastic Four ever.
Well, hopefully this won't be an ever thing, but...
until Fox gets pissed off enough and sells it back to Disney.
Something I will say that was a surprise to me is that we're even losing, like, Spider-Man's Future Foundation costumes. Which, you know, Future Foundation was a Fantastic Four thing. I get it, but, like, that can't be, like...
They also took Silver Surfer.
Yeah, who is included as a part of the Fantastic Four IP. Like, Silver Surfer being in the Fantastic Four 2 movie.
Oh, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
But
that to me, you know, I don't think that this is just a typical, like, IP kerfuffle. Like, this has to be Marvel telling Gazillion to stop. Because otherwise, going after, like, strictly connected costumes for other characters, that just seems a little suspect to me.
I mean, we LOL about the statement made about X-Men, but... what they're trying to do, so that, like, this, you know, these kids growing up seeing Guardians and all this other stuff will be like, what's X-Men?
No one even knows who the X-Men are anymore. Pshaw.
And, I mean, we LOL because we grew up with the X-Men being very popular in the 90s, but...
Yeah, literally the only thing that kept Marvel afloat for a long time there.
But, I mean... We say that, and maybe the kids growing up now are going to grow up not really knowing what the X-Men are.
Well, kids growing up now are going to have it rough.
Except the ones who have you as a gay uncle, because you're going to be like, yeah, Joss Whedon wrote a really good arc for the X-Men.
Okay, but Astonishing X-Men really was a great run of books.
I know, and so you're going to give them X-Herstory.
Well, if I were going to do an X-Herstory, I would be using a different run that was during one of the, like, all-ladies runs of teams, because also X-Men, really incredible female characters, despite the name of the team. But this is not ranting about X-Men. This is not about comics.
This is not comic buoy.
This is us having a conversation about gay characters. So, Sagi, I'd like you to get us started. This is just, we're going to have a light conversation, some of our favorite same-sex pairings. I do not anticipate it being a particularly long or drawn-out conversation. That is going to be next week.
And, you know, the funny thing is, I mean, I say funny, but maybe it's not that funny, is that even in 2017, the main place that we are seeing openly queer relationships portrayed is in indie gaming. And in other ventures, sometimes it's only just heavily implied but not stated outright, you know, which makes it kind of a big deal when you have things like The Last of Us with Ellie. That's her name, right?
Yep.
And the creators saying that they intended her to be a lesbian, or, you know, at least to be, have same-sex attraction to her friend. And then, so, I mean, it may seem like sometimes queer gamers are grasping at straws when they're like, oh, you know, Borderlands, for example, has had some same-sex attractions, you know, throughout their games. It may seem kind of like I said, almost grasping at straws, like, for representation, but, I mean, that's kind of how bad it is.
That's all we have.
Gearbox is one of the more supportive, and, I mean, they've actually supported the GX conventions really heavily as well. So we wanted to take a look at some of our favorite same-sex relationships or romances in games. And we tried to, stick to stuff that is at least very, very heavily implied and generally accepted by the fandom, which means we're not saying necessarily our headcanons and stuff. That would be in another episode.
Yeah.
So would you like me to start off?
I would.
So I'm going to start off, speaking of Mass Effect, BioWare, of course, being one of the very few, especially quote-unquote mainstream. I mean, I say BioWare's mainstream because they're EA, but, you know, BioWare's kind of special. They're their own beast within the EA conglomerate. You know, BioWare's done great things in terms of representation overall. I mean, back to, like, Jade Empire, right, even had some queerness.
Yep.
The Dragon Age games.
Bisexual characters.
Dragon Age has always had some queerness. Knights of the Old Republic, there was the gay planet kerfuffle, but since then they've really made an effort the Old Republic. I said Knights of the Old Republic. To have, like, recurring gay characters you can romance. And so, you know, one of the things that we love about BioWare games is that it's basically RPG or, you know, shooter meets dating sim. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about Mass Effect and, you know, in basically, you know, BioWare games in general. And of course, for male same-sex relationships, the first opportunity we got was not until Mass Effect 3. I believe that you were always able to romance Liara, right? Regardless of whether your Shepard was male or female in the first one.
I believe that is the case, yes.
But then there's the thing about, like, oh, well, Liara is an alien, and so, you know, it doesn't necessarily...
Asari.
Yeah, Asari, you know, it doesn't really mean that she's a lesbian or bisexual or whatever. But, I mean, I still choose to think Liara is bisexual. Thank you very much. It felt for those of us wanting to see our male Shepard have some dude loving, it felt a little unbalanced until Mass Effect 3. Now, in Mass Effect 3, you, of course, could romance a NPC, Cortez. He kind of helps you out with, like, the maintenance stuff, if I remember. It's been a while. And, you know, he's, you know, canonically a gay character, even if you don't choose to romance him. But I think the one that most of us cling on to is Shepard and Kaden. Recruiting Kaden back into your party is optional. without too much spoilers, you run into him on the Citadel, and it's kind of rough because there was that falling out after a while. Was that in 2 or 1? It was in 2 where there was the falling out, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, it was kind of a rough spot, but, you end up rekindling your romance, and, I mean, for me, maybe it's because Caden's always been my BB. Like, that for me was always the goal, was, like, he's gonna be my boo, and I don't know, Caden's not a perfect character, but I just always thought there was something really sweet about him, and, I always really enjoyed the kind of dynamic, because he's kind of, a little more of, if you were talking about kind of gay-male relationship dynamics, Shepard's kind of more of, like, the daddy type, and Caden's kind of more of the boy type, and,
Wowzers.
I mean, am I wrong, though? Am I wrong? But anyways, I thought that, there were some... I feel like, looking back on it, there were probably some lines that Shepard said that were, like, really cheeseball, like, oh, baby, I've always cared about you. Like, maybe not exactly that verbatim, but, there were some of the writing, I think, maybe was a little bit cheesy, but, for those of us, I mean, we look at back, this was 5 years ago, even 5 years ago, having the opportunity to have, in a blockbuster franchise like Mass Effect, with a character that is as beloved as Commander Shepard, be able to be in a same-sex romance. It was just a huge deal. There's the romance scene. I mean, of course, they're in, like, those black boxer shorts, but, still, that representation was huge. And, I mean, for me, I know Mass Effect 3 was so controversial. I mean, our first episode was about how controversial that game was, but I think that game did a lot of things right, and Shepard and Caden was one of them.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, you're kind of kicking my ass in these picks, because, I actually went with a bisexual character from Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty. This, of course, is Vamp, who, in a conversation with Solid Snake, discusses his same-sex lover, Scott Dolph, who was also a bisexual person, himself a Navy commander. Something that was at the time somewhat revolutionary. This was in the early 2000s, but this is not, like, a bad thing. It's just presented very matter-of-factly, it's accepted very much. Vamp himself has, throughout, the Metal Gear canon, relationships with same-sex characters and opposite-sex characters. In a lot of ways, to me, I would almost say that Vamp is probably, like, the best bisexual representation I can think of in gaming. And I also really want to point out, Snake Eater, Metal Gear Solid 3, also had bisexual male characters. Vol'jin and Rykov obviously come to mind. But all throughout the series, various sexual orientations, gender presentations, be they conformant or not, all included in the game world, all accepted at face value, never, like, are other characters allowed to be, like, homophobic, transphobic, etc., toward those characters without some amount of comeuppance. So, to me, that was actually really notable forward-thinking representation, which, in the early PS2 era was simply not something we saw a whole lot of.
That's awesome. I mean, I feel like there's a reason, there are many reasons why Kojima-san is so celebrated, and, Metal Gear really did push a lot of boundaries.
Absolutely. What is your number 2?
So I'm going to go with a little bit of, I guess I have a little bit of a bias here because, we've been involved with it's like as funders and presenters at the GX conferences. And so, blah, 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 collusion or whatever. But, like, honestly, if I didn't know the people behind this game, I still would have enjoyed it a lot. And, really, like, that has no influence on this. And so, I'm, of course, talking about Read Only Memories, which was from Midboss, the folks behind the GX GamerX conferences. And, they set out to create a game world kind of in a similar way. Of course, they're very heavily influenced by Kojima-san as well. you know, they wanted to have their game world be one where issues like gender identity and, you know, same-sex attraction were kind of non-issues. And, you know, I see a lot of times when this game comes up, because, you know, it's got a PS4 release, it's the Xbox One release, I believe, is on the way soon. Switch release in January. So, you know, it definitely pops up in the gaming news every once in a while, even though this game was a couple years back. And, you know, I still see a lot of people saying, like, oh, it's a Tumblr game. They're trying to force gender pronouns down our throats. I did not feel that it forced anything down anyone's throat. But, again, I am a queer person, and so maybe I have a bias there. But anyway, I wanted to include two side characters there. You know, NPCs, I mean, I say NPCs because basically, aside from the protagonist, everybody's an NPC in an adventure game like that. But these are two somewhat minor characters. They are the teen punks, Starfucker and Oliver. And you run into them when you're, you know, trying to kind of unravel the mysteries. They kind of get in your way. There's a cute car chase minigame. But they are very much crushing on each other. I don't think it ever really quite said in the original release that for sure they were together. But, I mean, you could probably tweet at the folks at Midboss and they'd be like, oh yeah, they're super gay. Like, so I mean, I know that they are gay for each other, but you know, it's just like matter of fact, you know, it's just like there are these two street punks who also are, you know, kind of gay for each other, even though they're kind of like thugs and stuff. So I really enjoy there's a lot of humor around these characters, not about their sexuality, but just, you know, kind of the way they interact with you as the player. And they're, even though they end up kind of being against you at first, they kind of end up, you know, being on your side. So, like, I found them really enjoyable. And I believe that one of the members of the Midboss team had done going to call it Twitch or Stitch, but Twine side story. And I should know, I've coded in Twine before. They made a Twine side story about Starfucker and Oliver. I have not played it yet, but I think it's really cool that they got their own little side story that I need to check out now.
Excellent. So the next one that I would like to focus on was from 1995. This was The Beast Within, a Gabriel Knight mystery.
Ooh, the Beast Within sounds like a metaphor for homosexuality.
Well, and it actually kind of is played that way. The TLDR is that the antagonist, Baron von Glower, is a lycanthrope. And, you know, this is actually, I would say, probably one of the most popular of the Gabriel Knight games. At least that's sort of my perspective on it. It's one of the handful that I have played through. Basically, there's a whole kind of, like, will they or won't they vibe about the entire game. Von Glower is, of course, trying to turn Gabriel Knight into a werewolf. He is very openly pursuing Gabriel Knight, like, sexually that whole time. But, basically, the TLDR, like, Von Glower is pretty open about pursuing Gabriel Knight sexually throughout the game, and, you know, Gabriel Knight is, for a lot of it, like, oh no, you've got the wrong idea. But toward the end, like, he's very clearly charmed and even does have dialogue acknowledging the mutual sexual attraction.
Ooh, Gabriel.
Right? Gabriel. The thing is, it seems so minor. You know, Sidekick is talking about characters that are allowed to be true to their love and have relationships that explore, like, real deeper themes beyond just the gay. It's taboo. But for me, looking at some of these littler steps that brought us there is important. And for me, you know, in my own formative years playing games in, you know, the 90s, it was a big deal to see these kinds of representations start popping up. So when Slaggy talked about, like, oh, let's talk about our favorite, you know, gay romantic couplings in games, for me, you know, it was a little less some of these fun things and a little bit more some of the important ones that made me feel for the first time that, like, oh, there is space at the table for us. So that would be my pick, would be Von Glower and Gabriel Knight.
Excellent. Well, I want to shift things a little bit, and by which I mean I would like to talk about two young ladies who are not, this is not necessarily 100% canon confirmed, but I mean, pretty much a large majority of the fandom tends to consider this canon, and this is Life is Strange, you know, Amazing Games, and it largely looks at, you know, the friendship between Max and Chloe, and how, you know, basically Max keeps using her time powers to go and save Chloe again and again and again and again. But, you know, there's, towards the end, in one of the later chapters, there's like a dream sequence, sort of, that happens, and it pretty explicitly says, it basically has, like, all these different versions of Chloe, kind of, like, taunting Max. And one of them basically is talking about, like, how, like, oh, you're so in love, you know, like, something. And then there's also, like, there were some moments, like, in the swimming. I felt like the swimming scenes were pretty lesbian-coded. Am I right?
I would agree with that statement.
But, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but one of the endings really kind of, I feel, goes to further, I mean, even if it may not be a physical relationship, there's definitely a strong love between these two gals, and, you know, they're...
I will say contextually, you using the term gals here is making the hair on my neck stand up.
I didn't want to say...
They're more than gal pals.
No, I didn't want to say high school girls because I didn't want to sound disgusting about it.
Okay, well, and I actually do completely respect that. I just, for me, I will never hear gals and not hear it in the context of, like,
gal pals.
Gal, like, pals.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I was...
You don't have to be sorry. It's, I mean, it's really more of a me and, you know, the way I consume media type thing, and the kind of media things I pay attention to.
All right, yeah. So, you know, the game, you know, there's a lot that it's about. It's about, you know, there's mystery, some sci-fi, murders, and crime and all that, and, you know, so there's really a lot going on in this game, but at its core, it is about the relationship between Max and Chloe, you know, who are old childhood BFFs who grew apart and then reconnect, and like I said, basically the entire premise of the game is about Max saving Chloe over and over and over. So, you know, I mean, this is the one where it's kind of like, are they or aren't they? I choose to interpret them as being, like I said, there's definitely some romantic things going on there, in my interpretation of the events in the game.
You know, I totally feel you on what you're saying, but I will say for me, the ending in question that you were alluding to, I thought it was clear cut. I didn't even realize that there were people who felt that it was ambiguous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, so we'll talk about this off air.
All right, fair enough. Well, then let me talk about my third. This is a little bit of a strange one, but I'm bringing another bisexual character to the forefront. This is Hannah from the Fear Effect series. You know, in the first game, she has a male love interest, Glass Royce. But in the second game, which is a prequel, she is in a relationship and, you know, very clearly in lesbians with Rain Keen, a female hacker. You know, she ends up going and working missions throughout Retro Helix, which is the second Mass or Fear Effect game. And something that I felt was really interesting, when this game released, it was a PS1 game, so late 90s it would have been, the quote-unquote lesbianic sort of themes were heavily advertised in games media at the time. You know, there were quite a few somewhat provocative images of Rain and Hannah embracing.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
In gaming mags every month. It was actually quite,
like,
a big
Game
deal.
Informer, it was like, look at busty Rain and her lesbian lover.
That was a little more of a GamePro thing than an EGM thing, but you're not
otherwise
wrong.
I said Game
wrong.
Informer, but...
Oh, fair. I, for whatever reason, I heard it as EGM. So yeah, it's just another one of those things for me where seeing this presented in a positive light in the mid to late 90s was, for me, something really impactful. And, you know, again, it's not necessarily being done in the most respectful of ways. There's definitely a lot of male gaze stuff going on. It definitely, you know, titillation is a big part of the game here. But, you know, the game writers had always said, you know, that they did intend on fleshing out Hannah and Rain's backstory, that, you know, they were going to remain something worth discussing in later element or iterations of the series. Unfortunately, the third Fear Effect game, in which the two of them together were meant to take center stage, was canceled. So we may never know. But again, for me, it seems silly and everything, but even male gazy, titillating, gonna sell to the straight gamer bros, lesbians being allowed on the cover of a game for me was a really big deal.
And then they're in their lingerie in the magazine ads. But the thing is that when you look up Hannah's character page on Wikipedia, the image that the Wikipedia, whoever like wrote this wiki article, chose is a really cute one of Hannah and Rain like hugging each other. So I'm glad that they didn't use the sexy lingerie one for the main image.
Hooray!
All right, I guess it's my turn to give my final one.
Yep.
And this is a recent one. It is from this year's, dare I say, indie sensation, Night in the Woods. Definitely one of my favorite games this year. It says a lot about, you know, kind of small town on Wii and, you know, the idea of, you know, coming back to a small town after you've been away for a while and, like, things have changed and are people kind of still stuck in their ways. Two of the main supporting characters are Greg, who is a fox, and Angus, who is a bear, because all of the characters in this game are very cute animals, despite all of the, you know, very heavy themes going on. And they are high school sweethearts who, they're basically, they've described themselves as the only homosexuals in town, and they're, like, working shitty jobs, trying to save up to move a little bit out of town and, you know, start a new life. The entire game, it's definitely not about their relationship, but, you know, when you, because, basically, in Night in the Woods, you're a cat girl who comes home from college, and to her old hometown, and tries to reconnect with her friends, and the two main kind of stories that you can follow are Greg, who is, you know, one of her old friends, or B, who is an alligator goth, who is another friend of hers. And so you kind of see more about Greg and Angus when you choose to, like, go with Greg's story paths and hang out with him and do adventures with him. But, you know, it definitely, you know, it does not hide the queer themes, but it's really matter of fact. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, they're just two gay 20-somethings in a small town trying to get out. Even there's like even times where some of the other characters are like, oh, well, you know, once they move out, they're like not going to be together because they're only together because they were high school sweethearts, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it definitely deals with a lot of other themes and like, oh, you know, I'm not good enough for you, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like, that's why I have always said about this game when people have asked about it. It's not just a cutesy animal game. There's a lot going on with this. And even, like, the thing that I actually really like the most is that, you know, there are times when Greg and Angus fight with each other and, you know, they don't always agree on everything. But at the end of the day, you know, they support each other. They're trying to make a new life for each other. And I think that's, like, a very realistic portrayal of, you know, a queer millennial relationship, you know, trying to get by. And, yeah, you know, I mean, they're very cute together, too, because they are a fox and a bear.
Aw, cuties.
All right, Spike, what is your last one?
A little bit of a joke pick, unfortunately. My fourth pick is actually the main characters of Disgaea 4, A Promise Unforgotten. In this game, of course, the main character is Valva Torres, Valvatoris is, of course, notable by virtue of being a vampire who was, you know, also a tyrant. Fenric is kind of his manservant who is, you know, let's say a bit wolfy himself.
Ooh, so you're very much into, like, the occult gaze today, aren't you?
I suppose so. That is, I suppose that is two vampires on my list here. And two werewolves on my list.
Holy two vampires, holy. Two werewolves, and two bisexual couples.
Well, hey, you know what?
You definitely got a more diverse list than I did.
That part I'm super down for. No, but, you know, throughout the game, basically, it's never directly stated because Valvatoris does not appear to return the feeling, but throughout the game, Fenric repeatedly makes comments about his eternal devotion to Valvatoris, says things that to me always read as very, like, romantic. You know, not just like, I am your butler and I'll do what you need, but instead, like, I will serve you because this is the greatest joy I've known in my life, and that sort of thing. And, you know, in reading and doing a little research for this episode, I actually found that it seems that most people in the Disgaea fandom do believe that Fenric is, you know, a gay character who is in an unrequited love for Valvatoris. And I feel like that's something we don't get a ton in games either, you know. Mass Effect 3, I would give big props to. It did have an out gay character who was dealing with the loss of his spouse. You know, I think that's very different from what we normally get to see.
Oh, yeah.
Gay characters get to have in their storyline. But also, you know, to have this representation that is someone who is in love with a character who is in love with someone in a straight romance, I feel like is also sort of a different angle, but still an interesting one. Of course, I'm sure there will be some people who disagree with my read on the material, and obviously that's fine. But
no, I have gay friends who, bless their hearts, always seem to fall for straight men.
That isn't what I meant there, but thank you for the confirmation.
No, I mean, I think that's definitely a very queer experience.
Well, that's actually why I picked it, though, because, again, it's an experience beyond just being, oh, we're gay, but happily coupled, monogamous, no other part of this relationship is going to be discussed other than we are gay and happy, period. And so, you know, to have a wider, more diverse set of representation is also, I think, important. Being allowed to have different experiences on camera or in game, as this statement case may be, is something that I think is really valuable, really important, and, you know, good to talk about.
Excellent.
All righty. Well, unless you have anything else, I think it's time to start winding down.
No, I do want to go ahead and do our social links a little out of order this week. I mean, I say out of order, but we've done it this way before. Just to keep things a little separated from just general feedback and question of the week feedback, I'm going to go ahead and share our responses to the question of the week, which was this week we sent off Pride Month with a look at our favorite same-sex couples in video games. Who are yours? Steve Pixel on Twitter says, what are my choices? Your Enzyme says there are only five, so frown. Which, I mean, Your Enzyme joking, but also kind of real truth.
Yeah, not as far off as you might think.
Zeon Shar on Twitter saying M Hawk and Anders for sure. Also M Shep and Kaiden Alenko. Zeon Shar definitely a big fan of the BioWare same sex romances for sure, for good reasons. Your Enzyme saying, I really wish there were more. It's so difficult to remember any memorable ones, but in my head canyon, it's Shepard and Garrus. I mean, yeah, that's the ultimate. If we were doing an episode about bromances, that would be like my number one bromance. Probably.
It won't make me forever mad that they can't kiss.
Yeah. And then Your Enzyme said, I wish there was a reference list we could go through. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're still kind of in the early days of true queer representation in gaming.
Well, I mean, and that is sort of half of the dialogue we're having here. You know, myself, an older queer, and Slidekick, a little bit of a younger queer, have very different takes on this because
hey, I'm a bitter old queen, just like you.
So he's, you know, able to talk about, you know, games that are all very new and do have what I think are some really resoundingly positive things to say about, you know, modern gay life and really constructive themes and explorations of ideas. And for me, it's actually been a little bit more grasping at straws, you know, throughout this whole period of time leading up to today, have we had to make do with in accepting
right.
in our representation?
And, you know, this is one of those cases where the couple years of difference between our ages really shows because, you know, some of the games you were picking, you know, were during a time more formative in your own sexuality that, you know, And I mean, you also were living your truth a lot earlier than I was. So I think that also definitely is something very interesting. And then JD saying red and blue slash green from the eponymous Pokemon game slash Sun and Moon. Again, a little bit of a fan in one, but I mean, I love it. Love it. All right. With that, I think it's time to... Is it time to start the wrap-up with the... Oh, no. We have first...
We're going to start the wrap-up, but first we're going to talk about some rumors. So let's dig in.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
We have one rumor this week, and it is a juicy one. Due to a... recent South Korean raiding, we have indication that there is a 3DS port coming for Ace Apollo, or Apollo Justice, Ace Attorney. This, of course, would be one of the Gyakuten Saiban spinoffs. Obviously, Apollo Justice, a character that a lot of people really like. Fingers crossed that this does pan out, but, you know, as we have noted time and time again, it costs money to apply for ratings board ratings, so you very rarely see ratings leaks that don't have some grain of truth to them.
That's exciting. And speaking of fan our headcanon, Phoenix Wright and Apollo Justice, they could be husbands.
All right, time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, so my gaming life has been a little erratic and sporadic. I have been playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. I'm on the Cactar server that is on the Aether data center. If you're on that data center or you're on Cactar, you ever want to run anything, you know, reach out to me privately. It's easy enough to do over on Twitter, Facebook, etc. I'm really enjoying it in a post Stormblood world. You know, I'm leveling Samurai. I'm just at level 54 for my Samurai job. Very exciting stuff. Actually, funny enough, with my main character, I thought I had finished all of the Heavensward story content, but I guess I had leveled my Dragoon in Heavensward just by doing chain running trials and doing the duty finder duties. So I've actually found that I have a lot of the Heavensward story content left to do. So I'm just doing that while I level Samurai. It's working out really well.
Oh, that is a great
way to do that. Super fun time doing it. Also getting like the flying mount and stuff was really fun for me. Flying in that game is cute or whatever. Also been playing Goner on the Switch. Really cool side-scrolling roguelike. Very similar progression system to what you might see in like Binding of Isaac. Having a lot of fun with it. It was like $10 on the eShop. You should check out a video or something if you're into the idea of like side-scrolly roguelike type stuff. I'm really enjoying it. Also been playing the Kairosoft Simulation Anime Park Studio for iOS. Anime Studio Story for iOS. Really enjoying it. I always enjoy these Kairosoft games, and this one is no exception. Put some time in on Mighty Gunvolt Burst, which is, I think, actually, like, the best possible homage to, like, classic Mega Man that you could imagine. It is a much better Mega Man tribute than Mighty No. 9 was, which is embarrassing. And then yesterday, we had a Japanese arcade game day. Both myself, Slagkick, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, Shane Alenko from the Ranger Pride podcast. Oh, obviously Sulker from Stabcast was there with us. Extifer from Guys on a Show. Were there other podcasts there, Slaggy? JD, who we talk about, or who interacts with us on this show and some of the other shows
a lot. We just mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, was there. And this was all to meet up with our well-loved listener and fan, Rod Shark. We had a great time. We all played a bunch of games, did a bunch of Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm, rented out one of the little karaoke rooms, which isn't video game related, but I don't really care.
Yeah, but it's part of the round one experience.
Right? Did a ton of music games, a ton of just fun games generally, and had a total blast. I told him I was going to mention on this podcast. I hope he's listening to it, and I hope that he and all of y'all out there know we had a super mega fun time, and I hope to do it again sometime real soon. Slaggy, what have you been playing?
Well, I'm going to touch base on starting with that, not reiterating any points, but like you had mentioned earlier, I was trying to play a little bit of Blaze Blue. Funny thing is, I was actually, because I was like, you know, I really should make an effort to try to play fighting games more. And so I was trying to play some Tekken 7. That didn't go so well for me. Interestingly enough, the thing that I ended up spending more time with was Street Fighter 4. I think it was Super Street Fighter 4.
Yep.
I don't know all the different releases, like, sue me. But I was like, okay, actually, Street Fighter 4... actually, like, it's a really good feeling game. Like, I guess there's a reason why Street Fighter is kind of the cat's pajamas in fighting games, right?
It's kind of the gold standard, I think you could say.
Yeah, so I'd had some fun with that. You know, definitely enjoyed Theater Rhythm as well, Cross Beats Rev. The notable thing here...
Did you enjoy when I clocked that you were playing Blaze Blue, so I popped in to kill you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're welcome.
Is that I got a Nesca card, and then you had given me one of your spare Benepass cards, so I'm able to now finally like save my quote unquote progression on my rhythm games, and that's good. So that's the notable thing there. Otherwise, mostly spending time playing Final Fantasy XIV. I had mentioned that I bought the story skip potions because fuck that noise. You know, I'm impatient. And I found it very freeing because the ironic thing is that I have not done any Stormblood content yet. But the thing is that when I finally have the classes that I want to level through Stormblood at 60, I'll be able to just jump right in. I've been spending my time heavily playing Red Mage, really enjoying that, and also leveling Dark Knight through mostly the Duty Finder and doing things like that, learning how to tank, really enjoying both of those. And, you know, I would have had patches worth of endgame content to get through just to unlock Dark Knight. So, I mean, paying the money for the story skip potion, like, I've already... It's just, like, not having... Knowing I don't have that barrier anymore, keeping me from content that I want to play now. Like, I mean, for me, it was a no-brainer. Otherwise, that's about it. Mario Kart a little bit. The funny thing is, you know, I just built my new gaming PC with your help about 2 weeks back now. And I've mostly been using it to play Final Fantasy XIV, which is not the most demanding game. But one game that I did fire up that my old PC was having a very hard time running was Planet Coaster. And so, you know, I loaded it up. Interesting to see some of the changes there, because I had only really played, for the most part, during the early access, when it was like the Thrill Seeker Edition or whatever. Like, they've added things where like, you can put in security cameras. And I don't know if it was just the scenario I was on, but there were a lot of pickpockets. And I finally had enough like security cops and cameras that like it's that they were getting caught. But I was like, damn. But, you know, Planet Coaster is great. If you are a fan of the original Roller Coaster Tycoon games, it's the spiritual successor. A lot of fun. Really limitless things that you can do. And I believe that they just added a summer pack that has, like, fireworks shows and stuff, which is not anything brand new. They had a fireworks maker in, 3, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. But, yeah, so that's a cool thing. All right, I guess that brings us to our social links. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, ratings, reviews, subscriptions. And if there's anywhere else that we should be that, you know, in terms of syndicating our content, please let us know. You can also find us at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But, of course, we effing love Twitter, and we like your Facebook likes. And you can mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
Mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
And finishing up with some of those tweets. So this tweet originally was to you, but that retro code had asked you, with today's systems being region-free, what avenue should people take to import more? And I say that because we are going to be doing an episode on import gaming
Yes, next week we will be doing an introduction to import gaming in the modern age. I'm really looking forward to that conversation. I hope you are looking forward to it too. If you have any questions about importing, now is the time to tweet at us and ask so we can include them in the show next week.
And that retro code says, ah, I can't wait to hear it. It's something I want to explore that I haven't taken the steps to do it.
Well, it has never been easier, as we're going to discuss.
I mean, I remember, I was going to start in on a story, and I'm like, I should save that for next week. But that retro code saying, I want that physical Mana collection for Switch.
Yes.
So I say that, but that was actually mostly it. But we also got a message from our friend Anthony from the Nintendo Love Fest podcast. And this is an episode request. With the release of Stormblood, you should totally do a retrospective from 11 to 14 to A Realm Reborn, Heavensward, and Stormblood, the evolution. That sounds great. I know that I have a very different experience with 11 than you do. But, you know, the funny thing is, and I don't know if Anthony, if this is part of what inspired your episode request, but there is a documentary that's been making the rounds that's on YouTube that involves, like, the history of Final Fantasy 14 1.0. And so, like, the timing is actually really great for that, too. So please look forward to that.
Excellent. Yeah, you know, and this is part of why I want to make sure we got this read in this episode, is I want people to know, you know, it's just that easy. You send us a tweet, you send us a message, hey, this is something I'd like to see you guys do, and we're always happy to take these requests seriously and see if we have anything interesting to say on the subject. In this case, I think that contrasting and comparing my experiences of 11 and 14 to Slagkick's experiences of 11 and 14, contrasting and comparing them to each other, to our own experiences from game to game, I think there is a conversation to be had there, and we will be looking into it.
Yeah, and that Final Fantasy 14 story, I don't mean the story in the game, but just the history of it is very crazy.
Oh, I mean, absolutely agree.
Like, when you think about it, that game's been around for 7 years. Not in its current form, but, you know.
Yeah, hey, I was there in the beta for the original version of the game, so I know what you mean.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think it's that time to shout out to those podcasts that we want you to support.
All right. You should go check out the Voice of Geeks Network over on VogNetwork.com. You can hear such shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal so many of my cues, the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Aleko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers metaseries, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai metaseries upon which it's based, and the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I also want to point out some non-VOG shows, namely the Nintendo Love Fest, does exactly what it says on the tin. Our good buddy Anthony is from that show, and their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I also want to point you in the direction of Slagkick's venture, Reading is Fundamental. It is now officially off-season.
Officially.
But, you know, myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, Delvin from VG Realness, Slagkick leads it. We end up talking about, you know, the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, the current episode, talking about our looks, talking about their looks, our thoughts on the looks, our thoughts on the challenges. It's just a good time. I also mercilessly make fun of Slagkick on that show. Some of our listeners love it and some of them don't.
Yeah, by the way, Game Buoy superfan Crystal has said the next time she sees you that she's going to slap you.
And I'll deserve it. Slaggy, why don't you do some shout-outs?
I have the feeling that you have, like, 20-plus years of slaps that you deserve when it comes to Superfan Crystal.
You know, when it comes to Superfan Crystal, this may seem strange to you, but
she has
slaps coming from me, girl.
Oh, no, I can see that. Anyways, I want to talk to you about our Hunty Bunch, including Game Bar, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, and the Magical Boys podcast, which is formerly known as Joystick Jockeys. DJ and Ruben have expanded to talk about more than just games. They're talking about anime, comics, all of their geeky passions. They are now a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective. They've just relaunched at Magical Boys podcast, so you know, it's definitely the same great content that you've been enjoying from Joystick Jockeys, just under a new name with an expanded scope. I'm really excited for this new direction for them. I, of course, want to give a lot of love to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd also like to direct you to our sister shows, Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Captain Spike's going to actually be taking the lead on an episode about Gundam in the next week or so, and we're also going to be taking a look at summer anime. So, you know, I know Anime Buoy's been a little slow for a while, but definitely picking back up there. Of course, I'd also like to direct you to Stabcast, which is the shortened form of Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, which is your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon that we do with Trainer Sulker. Our wonderful music was done by Jello Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They forever closed their doors a while back, but will be forever be 40 out of 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain in remembrance. All right, Captain Spike, I am having more trouble talking than I usually do, so why don't you wrap this up?
Same. I need me creamsicle slush or something after this. So let's go get those. For all of our listeners out there, thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you 7 days from now talking about import gaming, but until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And we will see you, space cow people. Ahoy, mateys. Ahoy, mate. Speak in your mic for me.
I guess that doesn't really help, does it?
It did not.
Mike. Mike, check. Check out Mike.
All right, looking good. I'm not threatening your life. I just mean there won't be more.
No, I know. But some lives that are being threatened are those of the Fantastic Four.
Okay, while editing, I don't normally make comments about the episode, but Slagkick just made a very funny segue, and we should all applaud him.